The evidence would suggest that a portion of what we categorize as UFOs are in fact advanced human technologies. Tesla's death ray concept, a particle beam weapon, appears to have directly influenced post-war projects like SDIO's Timber Wind, which was a nuclear thermal propulsion program protected under special access protocols. A multi-decade, highly funded and clandestine effort to achieve breakthrough technologies in energy generation and propulsion that have yet to see the light of day. The botched test of a Tesla-inspired ion craft, a lift-generating device that is using high-voltage coronal discharge. They discovered a 4.5-meter circular area devoid of moss and lichen, with soil samples showing radiation levels significantly higher than background levels. Immediately upon exiting the vehicle, they experienced what felt like burning sensations on their exposed skin. The heat was so intense that when Vicky Landrum re-entered the car and touched the dashboard to steady herself, she left a handprint from the effect. Documented physical symptoms following the encounter. They maintained their account consistently over decades despite scrutiny, and they even pursued legal action at personal expense and inconvenience. Doctors at Winnipeg's Miss Cordia Health Center documented his symptoms but initially struggled to explain their cause. Instruments showed an inexplicable altitude gain of approximately 1,000 feet, reaching nearly 3,500 feet before the craft leveled off. During this time, control of the helicopter was unresponsive. The Cash Landrum incident stands out amongst the myriad of UFO reports over the decades due to the severe nature of the physical effects that were experienced by the witnesses and the subsequent legal action against the US government on their behalf. Betty Cash, age 51, Vicky Landrum, age 57, and Vicky's 7-year-old grandson, Colby Landrum, were driving home to Dayton, Texas in Cash's 1980 Oldsmobile Cutlass after dining out. At approximately 9 p.m., they were traveling on State Road 1485, a winding, isolated two-lane road cutting through the dense woods near the southern tip of the East Texas Piney Woods, north of Houston. According to their eyewitness accounts, they first noticed a light above the trees that they initially mistook for an airplane approaching Houston Intercontinental Airport, which was about 35 miles away. They paid little attention to it at first. However, a few minutes later, as they continued driving on the winding road, they encountered what they believed to be the same light, but now it appeared much closer and extraordinarily bright. As described by Betty and Vicky, the light came from a massive diamond-shaped object hovering at approximately treetop level. The object's base was reportedly expelling flames and emitting intense heat. Betty Cash stopped the car about 130 feet from the object, and both women stepped outside. Immediately upon exiting the vehicle, they experienced what felt like burning sensations on their exposed skin. The heat was so intense that when Vicky Landrum re-entered the car and touched the dashboard to steady herself, she left a handprint from the effect. Vicky Landrum, a born-again Christian, initially interpreted the object as a sign of the second coming of Jesus Christ, telling her grandson, "That's Jesus, he will not hurt us." Meanwhile, Betty Cash considered turning the car around but abandoned this idea because the road was too narrow and the shoulders were soft from that evening's rain. As the witnesses watched, the object reportedly began to slowly ascend while continuing to emit flames and heat. Then, in one of the most controversial aspects of the case, the witnesses state that numerous military helicopters, later identified to most likely be CH-47 Chinooks, began to converge on the diamond-shaped vehicle from all directions. Betty Cash reported counting 23 helicopters, while Vicky Landrum estimated 20 to 25. According to their account, the helicopters positioned themselves near the strange craft as it moved away. The witnesses returned to their car and continued their journey, observing the spectacle of the object and helicopters until they eventually disappeared from view. All three of them began experiencing alarming health problems shortly after returning home. That night, around 1 o'clock in the morning, Colby reportedly woke up crying. By the next morning, all three were suffering from symptoms from what appeared to be severe sunburn and nausea. Betty Cash was the most severely affected. Her symptoms rapidly progressed to include dangerously high fever, large red welts on her face and hands, blisters, headaches, diarrhea, and reddening of the eyes. Over the following 4 days, her condition deteriorated so significantly that on January the 3rd, 1981, she was admitted to a Houston hospital, barely conscious and unable to walk. Vicky and Colby Landrum experienced similar symptoms, but with less severity. Betty Cash remained hospitalized for 6 weeks. During this time, and in the aftermath, she reportedly lost more than 50% of her hair and experienced skin loss on her face. Her personal physician, Dr. Brian McClelland, later described her condition as a textbook case of radiation poisoning in a September 1991 interview with the Houston Post. The witnesses claimed to experience ongoing health problems for years following the incident. Betty Cash suffered numerous medical complications in the years that followed. She eventually developed cancer, suffered a stroke in 1998, and passed away on December the 29th, 2001, exactly 21 years after the alleged encounter. The first formal investigation into the incident was conducted by UFO researcher John F. Schuessler. A former NASA project manager, Schuessler documented the case extensively. After interviewing the witnesses in February 1981, his investigations included questioning residents within a 5-mile radius of the reported incident location. Among those interviewed was police officer L.L. Walker, who was reportedly in the area on the night of the encounter, though the details of his testimony are not easy to track down, and I've been unsuccessful in finding them. In response to inquiries and the growing publicity surrounding the case, Betty Cash and Vicky Landrum were granted a meeting with Air Force representatives at Bergstrom Air Force Base on August 17, 1981. During this meeting, the women noted that a map in the room had the exact location of their encounter marked upon it, raising their suspicions about prior military knowledge. Despite this, military officials denied any knowledge of the incident or involvement with the reported helicopters. The case took an unusual turn when the UFO lawyer Peter Gersten filed a $20 million lawsuit against the US government on behalf of the three witnesses in 1981. The lawsuit claimed that the government knew UFOs were dangerous and that the military helicopters observed during the incident should have protected the witnesses. However, the legal effort ultimately proved unsuccessful. In 1986, a U.S. District Court judge dismissed the suit on the grounds that U.S. government involvement had not been demonstrated. Despite extensive efforts, no evidence could be found linking any military branch to the reported fleet of helicopters in the area on the night in question. The Cash Landrum incident stands apart from many UFO reports due to several factors that lend it credibility. It has multiple witnesses who experienced the same event and reported consistent details. The witnesses suffered documented physical symptoms following the encounter. They maintained their account consistently over decades despite scrutiny, and they even pursued legal action at personal expense and inconvenience. The Cash Landrum UFO incident remains one of the most compelling yet frustrating cases in UFO research. While the witnesses clearly experienced something unusual that December night in 1980 and subsequently suffered documented medical problems, the exact nature of what occurred continues to elude definitive explanation more than 4 decades later. The suffering of Betty Cash, Vicky Landrum, and young Colby Landrum was undoubtedly real, regardless of what caused it. As with many such incidents, barring the emergence of new evidence or witnesses, the Cash Landrum case will likely remain in that uncertain territory between the known and the unexplained. However, there are other cases with striking similarities that are worthy of highlighting. The Cash Landrum UFO incident is not the only case of physical harm being caused by close proximity to UFOs. There are even earlier cases, such as the Falcon Lake incident, this anomalous situation took place in May the 20th, 1967, when amateur prospector Stephen Michalak encountered an unidentified flying object near Falcon Lake, Manitoba, in an event that would become Canada's most rigorously documented UFO case. Michalak's account of a disc-shaped craft emitting scorching exhaust, coupled with physical evidence of radiation and corroborating medical reports, presents a compelling mystery. Stephen Michalak, a 51-year-old industrial mechanic and amateur geologist, was prospecting for quartz in Whiteshell Provincial Park near Falcon Lake, Manitoba, when he reported encountering two cigar-shaped objects with a reddish glow hovering in the sky. One object descended and landed on a rocky outcrop approximately 45 meters away from him, transforming as it did so into a disc-shaped craft roughly 10 meters in diameter. Michalak, wearing welding goggles to protect his eyes from rock chips, observed the craft for 30 minutes, sketching its features and noting a door-like opening emitting bright light and muffled voices. When he approached and called out in multiple languages, the voices ceased. The craft then sealed its opening, rotated counterclockwise, and expelled a blast of hot gas or air from a grid-patterned vent, setting his shirt and cap on fire and burning a checkerboard pattern into his abdomen. The object ascended vertically, leaving Michalak disorientated, nauseous, and vomiting as he stumbled back to his motel. Michalak returned to the site with investigators weeks later. They discovered a 4.5-meter circular area devoid of moss and lichen, with soil samples showing radiation levels significantly higher than background levels. In 1968, Michalak chipped open a fissure in the rock, extracting molten silver fragments that also tested radioactive. These artifacts, alongside Michalak's melted glove and burnt clothing, became central to subsequent analysis. Within hours of the experience, Michalak developed first and second degree burns on his abdomen in a distinct grid pattern matching the craft's vent. He suffered nausea, vomiting, headaches, and a 16-pound weight loss over the following weeks. Doctors at Winnipeg's Miscordia Health Center documented his symptoms but initially struggled to explain their cause, while Dr. Horace Dudley, a U.S. radiologist, suggested Michalak's symptoms aligned with 100 to 200 rotagens of gamma radiation exposure. Atomic Energy of Canada Limited, AECL, tests at Pinawa Laboratories found no evidence of radiation sickness. Instead, they attributed his burns to thermal and chemical sources. Despite this, recurring rashes reappeared on Michalak's torso until his death in 1999. And his clothing retained radioactive contamination. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police, Royal Canadian Air Force, US Air Force, and AECL all investigated the incident. The RCMP confirmed Michalak's physical evidence but could not verify the craft's origin. The US Air Force Project Blue Book team, the first official government project for studying UFOs led by Dr. J. Allen Hynek, labeled the case unexplained, noting no military aircraft matched Michalak's description. The incident inspired Boris and Arkady Stragatsky's 1972 sci-fi novel Roadside Picnic, which depicted alien litter contaminating Earth. In 2018, the Royal Canadian Mint commemorated the event with a glow-in-the-dark coin. Michalak's son, Stan, co-authored a book defending his father, claiming that if it was a fake, his father was a genius. The presence of AECL's Whiteshell Laboratories, 40 kilometers away, a nuclear research facility operating the WR-1 reactor until 1985, also fueled speculation about experimental aircraft. However, AECL denied any and all involvement in the situation. The Cash Landrum and Falcon Lake incidents stand out in ufology for their combination of physical evidence, radiation-linked injuries, and official investigations, but there are other cases worldwide that exhibit striking parallels in electromagnetic interference, physiological harm, and military engagement. On August 27, 1979, Deputy Sheriff Val Johnson encountered a UFO while patrolling near Steven, Minnesota. A beam of light struck his squad car, rendering him unconscious for 39 minutes. Upon awakening, Johnson discovered that the windshield of his car had been shattered. the radio antenna bent, the car clock had stopped working, and his wristwatch, both of which were delayed by 14 minutes. Sheriff Johnson also had first-degree burns on his abdomen and eyes, which physicians would later compare to welder's burns, caused by exposure to extreme brightness and heat. So like the Cash Landrum and Falcon Lake case, Johnson's injuries suggest exposure to an intense energy source, perhaps emitting a field of energy around the vehicle that causes an area of damaging effect to biological tissue, something that's been studied at length through the CIA and other agencies in relation to human exposure to anomalous vehicles. In this case, as well as Cash Landrum's, it suggests a potential system malfunction rather than a desired effect. Another significant UFO counter that follows along similar lines was the 1976 Tehran UFO incident in Iran, which involved direct interference with military jets that had been scrambled to intercept an unknown object. During this UFO encounter on September 19, 1976, two Iranian F-4 Phantom II jets experienced systematic failures after achieving a radar lock on a UFO that was emitting intense multicolored lights. The two pilots experienced a total loss of communication systems and instrumentation at close range, with a catastrophic weapon system failure during an attempted missile launch from one of the fighters towards the object. Similar to Cash Landrum's helicopter radio disruptions and Falcon Lake's compass anomalies, the Tehran incident highlights UFOs' capacities to disable advanced technology, shutting down anything from a stopwatch to a missile guidance system in a classified military platform, suggesting a highly advanced electronics interference capability or a natural consequence of critical proximity to the effects of the vehicle's energy source. A similar case can be found in Ohio, USA, in 1973, known as the Coin Helicopter Incident, and it's one of the most compelling and well-documented military UFO encounters on record. It occurred on October the 18th, 1973, near Mansfield, Ohio, and it involved a U.S. Army Reserve helicopter crew that experienced direct interaction with a strange aerial object, including altitude anomalies and a green light beam that seemed to defy known physics. The crew was made up of Captain Lawrence J. Coyne, the pilot, Lieutenant Arrigo Jezzi, the co-pilot, Sergeant John Healy, the crew chief, and Sergeant Robert Yanaksek, the onboard medic. As they flew their Huey helicopter from Columbus towards Cleveland, Ohio, at approximately 2,500 feet altitude, the air crew observed a bright red light approaching rapidly from the east. At first, they assumed it was an aircraft on a collision course, prompting Captain Lawrence Coyne, the pilot, to initiate emergency descent procedures to avoid impact. However, to their amazement, the red object abruptly halted mid-air and hovered directly above their helicopter, maintaining close proximity. In that moment, a vivid green beam of light shot down from the underside of the unknown object and bathed the cockpit in an intense emerald glow. According to the crew, the beam lit up the entire interior of the aircraft, allowing them to see each other and the control panels with unusual clarity. The light had no identifiable source or mechanism, but behaved like a directed spotlight of unknown origin. What occurred next defied normal aerodynamics. Despite the helicopter being in a descent configuration, with controls set for downward movement, the aircraft began to ascend without input from the pilot. Instruments showed an inexplicable altitude gain of approximately 1,000 feet, reaching nearly 3,500 feet before the craft leveled off. During this time, control of the helicopter was unresponsive. Captain Coyne and his co-pilot were unable to influence its motion. It was as if an external force had seized the aircraft and was manipulating its flight path. Once the UFO departed swiftly westward at high speed, control systems returned to normal and the helicopter resumed a safe flight path. The object itself was described as being around 60 feet long, dark gray or metallic in color, with no visible wings, rotors, or tail. In addition to the red forward light and green beam, white lights were seen along the structure's body. Its flight characteristics included sudden stops, rapid acceleration, and intelligent maneuvering, all of which ruled out conventional aircraft or meteorological explanations. The crew was left shaken, but they managed to land safely in Cleveland. All four witnesses, Captain Coyne, Lieutenant Aragogezi, Sergeant John Healy, and Sergeant Robert Yanaksek, submitted separate, consistent reports. They were experienced military personnel with no history of psychological instability or substance use. Civilian witnesses from the ground corroborated seeing both the helicopter and the unusual object. Radar confirmation from the region also detected an unknown aerial presence at the time of the incident, adding further credibility to the event. The case drew the attention of major UFO researchers, including Dr. J. Allen Hynek, and was later included in John Schussler's catalogue of UFO-related physiological effects. Although no long-term injuries were reported in this case, the incident stands out because it involved direct electromagnetic interference, a green beam of unknown composition, a forced movement of a military aircraft, all suggesting not just a technological anomaly, but a controlled interaction from an intelligent source. The persistent narrative for these cases is one of alien visitation, but this broad and relatively ambiguous explanation for UFO encounters might be used to mask a more terrestrial truth, that many of these documented UFO incidents could represent tests or accidents involving classified human technologies, rooted in high-energy physics and propulsion research. When Tesla died at the New York Hotel, government agencies immediately recognized the potential importance of his research. On January 9, 1943, just 2 days after his death, representatives from the Office of Alien Property, OAP, seized about 2 truckloads of material from Tesla's hotel room. This swift action comes amid concerns that Tesla's papers might fall into the hands of Axis powers or the Soviets during the World War. Tesla's nephew, Sava Kosanovic, hurried to his uncle's room but found that someone may have already gone through his uncle's effects. Technical papers were missing, as well as a black notebook with several hundred pages, some marked government, suggesting that even before the official seizure, certain materials may have been removed by unknown parties. The FBI's involvement was significant, with P.E. Foxworth, assistant director of the New York FBI office, called in to investigate. According to Foxworth, the government was vitally interested in preserving Tesla's papers. This interest extended to the highest levels, as the FBI was advised by the office of Vice President Henry A. Wallace that the government was vitally interested in preserving Tesla's work. The US government classified Tesla's materials, fearing their potential military application. Tesla's death ray concept, a particle beam weapon, appears to have directly influenced post-war projects like SDIO's Timber Wind, which was a nuclear thermal propulsion program protected under special access protocols. The Strategic Defense Initiative, known as Star Wars, began in 1983 with the aim of developing systems to protect against ballistic missile attacks. A key component was Project Timberwind, a highly classified special access program that ran from 1987 to 1991, with funding approximating $139 million. Timberwind focused on developing nuclear thermal rocket technology for potential use in space-based defense systems. The program's goals aligned with aspects of Tesla's theoretical work on energy projection. It was classified under strict secrecy, with Lieutenant General James Abrahamson, SDI director, seeking quick deployment of orbital weapon systems. In 1991, the program was abruptly transferred to the Air Force and rebranded as Space Nuclear Thermal Propulsion. The continuation of this program suggests actionable and operable developments that continue in secrecy to this day. A 1971 Australian government memo from Harry Turner noted that the CIA's strategy was to publicly debunk UFOs as a means of providing cover for these programs, creating a facade of ridicule to deter Soviet interests, the primary national security concern of the time. The development of experimental craft like the Avro Canada VZ-9 Avro car, a saucer-shaped VTOL prototype tested from 1959 to 61, further strengthens the argument of anti-gravity craft in lenticular or saucer-shaped designs being of great interest to Western defense infrastructure. Although some argue the Avro car was purposeful disinformation using conventional propulsion methods with an unconventional airframe, leading to poor performance capabilities, This could be viewed as an effort to show the public the infeasibility of the aircraft design to further debunk claims of saucer-shaped vehicles achieving incredible aeronautical feats beyond the realms of currently understood physics. In the 2010s, the Department of Homeland Security proposed Kona Blue, a program that aimed to reverse engineer recovered non-human vehicles. While publicly dismissed as a meritless special access program, its existence fueled whistleblower claims like those of David Grush, who alleged hidden UFO retrieval projects buried deep within the defense intelligence architecture of the United States. Internal memos surrounding the issue suggest that Kona Blue sought to exploit public fascination with aliens to deflect attention from its true goal, the integrating of Tesla-derived technologies into next-generation aerospace platforms. In the Cash Landrum incident, you have some technological links. The diamond-shaped craft's plasma exhaust and radiation profile match up with SDI-era prototypes for Project Red Light, a rumored special access program testing pulsed nuclear propulsion. The 23 or so Chinook helicopters reported by the witnesses also heavily suggest a military test gone wrong, and aligns with the Cold War-era snatch-and-grab protocols for recovering compromised prototypes. And the Air Force's denial of involvement, despite radar logs from Ellington Field, mirror the type of classification playbook we would expect for compromised assets within a SAP structure, such as Timberwind. The Falcon Lake incident also has a signature of human experimentation. Mikalax burns and radioactive debris suggest a botched test of a Tesla-inspired ion craft, a lift-generating device that is using high-voltage coronal discharge. The fact that Canada's version of the Atomic Energy Commission attributed the radiation to natural sources despite isotopic anomalies in the recovered metal is another hint towards potential cover-up of human technology. And even in the more exotic cases, such as the Tehran Air Force incident, where two military warplanes had catastrophic system failures while attempting to engage a UFO, this is still reminiscent of effects described in Tesla's Teleforce weapon, which could be used for targeted electromagnetic pulses to disable electronics. CIA memos from 1976 confirm that this incident was internally attributed to a Soviet EMP weapon. The evidence would suggest that a portion of what we categorize as UFOs are in fact advanced human technologies, misidentified due to deliberate obfuscation protocols from within the defense intelligence architecture of black projects and special access. Black budget programs have exploited the extraterrestrial mythos to shield research into disruptive propulsion systems. While the possibility of advanced extraterrestrial visitation is, in my opinion, still a likely scenario for some of the UFO cases throughout history, the parallel history of high-energy experimentation, electrogravitic research, and the sequestering of knowledge from the brightest minds in electrical physics, such as Nikola Tesla, suggests a multi-decade, highly funded, and clandestine effort to achieve breakthrough technologies in energy generation and propulsion that have yet to see the light of day.